It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
The real mystery is, what's in this sandwich?
What sandwich?
Ooh, the plot thickens.
We have spilled cornstarch into the plot.
Do you ever make the cornstarch and water non-Newtonian thing?
Yep.
I find non-Newtonian fluids to be fascinating. You know they can go both ways, which sounds weird. Ketchup is a non-Newtonian fluid. But unlike, say, cornstarch, or I think custard or some others, those ones are liquid until you put pressure on them, and then they're solid. The ketchup is the opposite. It's essentially a solid mass until it has pressure, then it suddenly becomes liquid. Which is why there's all the weirdness with getting it out of the bottle and all that. Has to do some with that.
I did not know that.
You know, I learned that on a dumb science show. Couple dumb science shows, actually.
A dumb science? Are there non-dumb science shows?
It is a pop science show where it's like, here are these charismatic people to do the most basic and usually silly of science experiments. Well, and that's the thing. That's how I found it. We're talking about non-Newtonian fluids in it, and they had, I think it was custard or something, and they had a bowling ball, and they're like, it's clearly liquid, and they dropped a bowling ball, and suddenly, you know, and then they tried to do it with ketchup, and it had the exact opposite effect. It splattered everywhere. Like, well, that's because. So that's how I learned that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that freezes the bodies of children, keeping them in stasis for the day when the Dark Lord re-arises and we feast on their innards. Really, we're the only podcast in the world that does that.
I can believe it.
I'm Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
You can believe that we do that, or you can believe that we're the only ones?
I can believe that this is the only podcast that does.
Yeah. Well, we're the only podcast in the Evil Universe. So
I seriously doubt, of all the podcasts that exist, and there are many now, that you're going to find one that would claim that. Even if it were true. Okay.
All right, then. Good night, everyone. Good times. So, for those of you just joining us, here's how this works. This is pretty much
it. What is wrong? What is wrong with this whole thing?
So we have a hat. Well, there is a hat. It's magic in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks, somewhere, somehow, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. And the hat, magically on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them, manifest physically within the hat itself. Some other guys are usually stuck drawing the note cards out or in them, reading them on the air, talking about them till we're bored. They're bored doing that for about an hour, and that's the show. But when they're not available, when no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can call the E-Team. It's the same theme music, but in a minor key. Da, 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 da. Da, da, da.
That was good. good. That was really good. Good job. I'm proud of you.
So, yeah, we get stuck doing this. We don't want to be here. You don't want to be here. So let's just get through this.
Okay. All right. Trying all right. something out of the hat.
I love the idea that people are listening wholly voluntary, but they don't want to be listening either. I feel like a long time ago we lost the pity listeners.
Did we ever have those?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Right from the get-go, we had people who listened and were like, yeah, yeah. And you can tell because the pity listeners always drifted off slowly.
Mm.
There were people who were just like, oh, yeah, great. And for me, I'm not coming back. But then the other one's like, oh, no, I'm a little behind. Oh, yeah, I'm working on Oh, I'm way behind. And usually I'd be like, you just don't listen anymore, do you? And they're like, no. All right, you drew a thing. What's the thing say?
I don't know how it could be abridged, but it is.
Hmm.
From Azure Talon.
Oh, even the evil universe hates Azure Talon.
Dudes of Hat.
Okay.
Did you ever... No, I'm sorry. Did you hear the Energizer Bunny was arrested?
I did not hear that the Energizer Bunny was arrested.
Mm-hmm. He was charged with battery. See, this is...
I will murder you and anyone who ever knew you.
This is the kind of joke you'd hear on the Floppy Show. Did you ever hear of the Floppy Show?
I never heard of the Floppy Show.
In Des Moines, in WHO TV... They had a kids programming, like a lot of local TV TV stations did. They would play cartoons. And the host of the cartoon show was a ventriloquist named Dwayne Ellen. And he had this box, this oblong box, out of which emerged this dog puppet.
Okay.
And the dog's name was Floppy. He kind of looked... Dwayne Ellett called him a beagle because he looked like, say, Snoopy.
Okay.
He didn't look like an actual beagle, but
No.
He very much looked like Snoopy would look, except he was brown and he had floppy ears, so he called him Floppy. And so they had this show, and then kids would be there live.
Yeah.
Okay, so the show would start, and he would tell a couple jokes with Floppy, and the kids would laugh or whatever, and then they'd play cartoon. And then they'd come back, and the kids would stand in line, and they'd get to tell a joke to Floppy.
Oh, okay.
And there got to be some very popular ones. Like, the most popular joke that kids would tell Floppy is, why'd the man... no, I don't remember the joke. Why'd the man put the car in the oven?
Why did the man put the car in the oven?
Because he wanted a hot rod. And they would tell this joke over and over and over again, and Floppy would always act completely surprised, like he didn't know the answer. And also, there was another thing. They didn't show this on the air, but we were on the Floppy Show a couple times ourselves as kids.
Okay.
So, off the air, they would
beat us with sticks.
No, there was this thing where you would pinch Floppy's nose, and there'd be this honking noise or whatever.
All right.
So you could honk his nose. They also gave you, like, pop and potato chips and stuff or whatever. It's kind of fun. But also, it was kind of a birthday thing. Like, if it was your birthday, they would say, it's this kid's birthday and this kid's birthday. So, it was a popular thing for kids to go do on their birthday. So, we went there twice. I think once for someone's birthday. I don't remember. But anyway. So Dwayne Ellen Floppy. And this is the kind of joke that some kid might come up and tell. Did you hear the Energizer Bunny was arrested? And then... Floppy would go, no, I hadn't heard that. What happened? And then the kid would say, you know, he was charged with battery. And typically the kids were little kids, so they'd often mess it up.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
Dwayne Ellett knew what the answer probably
doesn't
was.
Doesn't work unless you know how to putt.
So he would joke. And anyway, we used to watch the Floppy Show when we were kids, and we were on it a couple times. And as I got older, it was kind of interesting to sort of get some of the jokes that Dwayne Ellett told.
Oh.
Sometimes the jokes he told were kind of for the adults.
Oh.
I mean, they weren't lewd or anything, but they were totally above the kids' heads.
They were about buying war bonds and shit like that.
I don't know, stuff like that. But anyway, and he'd be at the Iowa State Fair, and when the fair was on, he was broadcasting from the fair. So, Dwayne Allen Floppy. Most people who are from the Des Moines area, who are my age, would totally know who that is.
Yeah. It was your version of Bozo, but you didn't
kind
have
of.
Bozo.
But I don't. Did Bozo have kids come up and tell jokes and stuff?
I think so, because this is very similar. Where I was in Portland. Well, I wasn't in Portland, but the Portland TV station was Ramblin' Rod Anderson.
Yeah.
And he was a guy, and his shtick was he had this coat that was just covered in buttons. Like picture buttons or sayings and stuff, not like buttons to hold your clothes. Like decorative buttons. Mm. And it was just covered in it. And they would show cartoons on the show, and he would talk to the kids and stuff. My friend got on a couple times. I could see him on there. They were on these like bleachers, and he would talk to them. And the birthday thing there was the birthday kids would all line up. And I think in the very early days, they sang some sort of song that I don't really remember. Pretty early on for my age. I mean, this started back before color TV and things, I think.
Yeah, right.
But pretty early on in my childhood, they worked out a deal with Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh.
And so the Chuck E. Cheese characters would come out, and they would sing a birthday song, which I didn't know at the time, but was just a slightly tweaked parody of Dancing in the Streets.
Oh.
By David Bowie and Mick Jagger. And including throwing in references to Chuck E. Cheese, because the assumption in the song was that that's where you're going to go celebrate your birthday.
Right.
And they would give them, gift certificates to Chuck E. Cheese and stuff like that. But it very much was a similar kind of deal. And I think for a lot of people, the version of that was Bozo. A lot of them probably had unique ones like we did too. But
well, I mean, this guy was a very good ventriloquist actually. So that was his act. I mean, I suppose other people had whoever the person was like a juggler or had some other kind of talent other than just talking to kids.
I don't know if Ramblin' Rod had any other talent. And of course, in my head, I want to be like, and then years later, he was busted in some sort of pedophilia scandal. But I'm like, I don't think that's true at all, but I think part of my brain just assumes so because that's the cliche now, But I'm like, no, I mean, don't people go around saying Ramblin' Rod was into that stuff, because I think I might be imagining that.
Well, Dwayne Allen would do...
Wikipedia might have something to say.
You could hire him to do other things. I think he came to our church once, even. And also, he made other puppets, and he had a Sunday show it was called the Floppy Town Gazette, and the idea was kind of like the Muppet Show, except for his puppets all worked at a newspaper. Yeah.
And so then
it was kind of fun.
In the 90s, he was in a horrible accident in which he fell into a vat of radioactive goo. And when he arose from it, he didn't die, but he had mutated into Jeff Dunham.
No, I think he had a heart attack while he was jogging.
Oh, all right. Other people are finding that joke funny.
I'm sure.
You don't know who Jeff Dunham is?
I know who he is.
All right. I was going to say, I believe there are literally two ventriloquists who continue to make a living at it, and Jeff Dunham's the more successful of the two. And the other one's from America's Got Talent originally, I think. Yeah, but this also very much could be construed as a dad joke. And I think that's appropriate because Azure Talon's a father, and his kid's like 6 now, or maybe even older. So he's probably getting into that groove. Meanwhile, the youngest one next door, his favorite joke right now is, what do you get when you cross a vampire with a mouse? Nothing. Vampires hate crosses.
Oh. Wait, and he like gets that?
He thinks it's funny, yeah.
Hmm.
The one I always have, did you ever watch The Electric Company?
Yes.
So they had Spider-Man on The Electric Company.
They did. He didn't talk.
It was weird Spider-Man, yeah. And there was an episode in which the villain was the Joker, or it was something, the joke teller or something. He told jokes, and people would laugh, and that would, like, incapacitate them because they were busy laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And he told a joke, so what do you get when you cross lion with a head of lettuce, I think he said. It should probably be cabbage, but I think he said head of lettuce.
Hmm.
Man eating coleslaw. And for some reason, like that instant is stuck in my head. I can hear him saying that joke.
Hmm.
So that one stuck with me for no reason. I didn't particularly find it funny. But it just is there. You know how there are bits like that.
Yep.
I got a bit for when I'm two. And it's not even really me going to the bathroom. It's me heading to the bathroom to go to the bathroom. And for some reason, there's like a 3-second bit in there. And I remember walking there. I remember what I was wearing. Like, I don't know why, but it's just in there. It's from when I was like a toddler.
Just something, that moment you remember.
Yeah, it's just in there. I know where it was because, yeah, I remember wearing the house. And, yeah, weird.
That is weird.
All right, so anyway, fuck you, Azure Talent. Next.
Next.
Oh, I have to draw it, don't I?
Yes, you do.
I hope your family's doing well, though. You should tell her all of the jokes we just said. Hopefully she's still young enough to find them funny. Don't tell her the one about radioactive Jeff Dunham, though. That she might not get that one.
What's Irish and always outdoors?
I don't know. What is Irish and always outdoors?
Patio furniture. I got that from a candy wrapper. I thought it was pretty hilarious.
Nice, nice. A few years ago, we got back into the no arms and no legs jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those?
Art.
Art. Phil. Bob.
Yeah.
But my favorite, and Trish hates this one, what do you call a man with no arms and no legs who plays baseball?
Mm.
Third base.
Oh, boy.
I love that, that one.
Is, that's bad.
Trish is like, oh, it's not very good.
It's good. I mean, formally, yeah. It's good.
No, she disagrees with that, I think, is oh, what it no, is. I think she it, doesn't think. She's like, it's supposed to be a name. Well, like, no, that's it works best after you've told other told, ones. You don't right. tell it by
it's
itself.
It's in a series.
Yeah, it's the left turn.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I would do the art, and then, what do you call man with no arms and no legs? In a pile of leaves.
I don't know if I've known that one.
Russell.
Oh.
Yeah, and then what do you call man with no arms and no legs? In a hole. Phil, hanging on the wall, Art, swimming in the pool, Bob. my sixth grade teacher said, was saying it as their family members. Like, I have this uncle who has, and he said, I have this aunt, and she only has one leg. You know, her name is?
Eileen.
Eileen.
I knew a three-legged dog named Eileen, and it wasn't even on purpose. Someone said, no, that was the dog's name before she lost the leg. I thought, that's really weird.
And then my sixth grade teacher said, I have another aunt who only has one leg, but she's Chinese. Do you know what her name is?
No.
Irene. I say this not because I find this funny.
What does that even mean? I don't...
It's a racist joke about mixing up the L's and R's.
Oh,
Yeah,
I guess so.
It's saying that when she tries to pronounce Eileen, that's how it comes out. And I'm not saying this because I find it funny. I'm saying this because I am constantly wanting the world to know how much of a shitty person my sixth grade teacher was.
Did you get the joke when she told it?
I think so.
I think I've only...
He told.
I'm sorry. Boy, that was sexist of me, wasn't it? To just assume you had a female sixth grade teacher. All my elementary teachers were female, so that's probably why I think that.
All of mine were, except for him, but not all the ones in my school were. I just happened to have.
Oh, that's true. There were
although,
men
there were only one or two other men, besides, and that was his first year teaching, and one of his last.
Wait, no, my fifth grade really teacher bad. Was a male, that's true.
He went off and became a cop. And then he fucked that up, but anyway. Huh. He's the one, the sixth grade teacher who, for fun, told us in detail the atrocities of the Holocaust. Not because to forget, like, because he thought it was cool and interesting. And as sixth graders, most of us did as well.
Honestly, it's only recently in my life that I've been aware of that stereotype of the Chinese person, or generally Asian person, I suppose, because I don't suppose they're that specific, not being able to pronounce. I've only recently become aware of that. I think the first time was, I had not seen A Christmas Story until well into my adult life. Yeah. Then they have that, and I was like, what are they doing? Why are they doing that? And someone had to explain to me, oh, that's a stereotype of
yes, that. And the thing is, what makes it suck is it is based in a real thing,
okay.
Which is that Japanese have this really bad, and I believe Chinese... No, but the Chinese have an L. I don't know. The Japanese, very specifically, they have R's, they don't have L's, and, like... in terms of where your lips and teeth and tongue are and stuff, between the two is very close. So if you did not grow up with that, it can be very hard to tell. It's not that they just switch them. It's that the language is such that they have a hard time differentiating.
Well, when I,
and in fact, I've seen people teaching Japanese people English, and they have to spend a lot of time on, like, here's the difference between R and L.
Well, but see, when I was studying linguistics, it was pointed out that English is an unusual language in that it has R's and L's, and it pronounces them in such a way that even the native speakers have a hard time with. Yeah. Little kids have a hard time with R's and L's. So the linguists are kind of baffled as to how it has survived, because if even your native speakers have a hard time with it, why do you keep doing it? But we have this R and L thing in our language, and it persists pretty hard, even when little kids are growing up, they struggle with it.
Yeah, and so it becomes, essentially, it's an exaggerated form of, isn't their accent funny?
Yeah.
Is what that's about.
I didn't even know about that until I was older. Yeah. I never even heard of it. So I wouldn't have gotten your sixth grade teacher's joke at all. I would have thought, what does that mean?
It's okay, then he would have told you about lampshades made out of human skin. So you could have enjoyed that. Mark McKibben. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Mark McKibben. Have you ever thought about doing an episode with just the producer and William's wife? Well, first off, right off the bat, no, we have not.
No, we never have thought about that. I don't.
But in this case, you mean the evil producer and evil William's evil wife. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say your wife would not want to do it.
I can honestly say that I do not know if she would or not.
If she would be interested, I think that is something we should do at some point.
Because
we don't quite talk about her as much as we talk about Trish, but it's close. I mean, I'm betting that longtime listeners feel that they know her a little now.
Here are the reasons she might not do it.
One, she's not really alive. Two, she lives in Canada. Well,
as people have noticed, I pretty much never mention her name.
Three, she's on fire.
This is because right now. She's a person that is, she's more private than I am, probably, when it comes down to it. So that would be a reason she would be like, well, I don't really want to do that. But
we'll use a fake name. We'll call her Scheherazade.
But she, I don't, as far as the just being recorded, you know, or having a whole bunch of people listen to what she's saying, I don't think that part would bother her. Although there might have been a time where it would have. I think she's a lot more comfortable with that stuff now than she was. So, I mean, I could ask her. She might be interested in it.
I think it'd be cool. I mean, not here, but, like, you know, for $400 or something, we could get a room.
Sure. Yeah, she might be interested in doing that.
I don't know why this cracks me up, but there's a commercial for Sling TV. And the commercial is there's this couple having a different couple over, and they're like, do you guys want to try slinging with us? And they're like, what? And they're like, we're slingers. We just love the freedom of it. And the husband's like, yes, we do. And the wife's seeming really nervous. And then it's the thing where they sit down and like, the voiceover tells you about it. And then you look and, like, the guy has started taking off his shirt. And like, what are you doing? And I don't know why. It cracks me up. Like, it's the dumbest thing, but it cracks me up.
It seems like a joke from another era.
A little bit.
Seems like a joke you'd see in the 70s. Or.
I feel like swingers are making a comeback, though. Except now, it's frequently called doggers, at least in the UK. Dogging is a thing. It's similar to swinging, but you just go out to, like, old, like, into the woods, and, like, cars will park together, and they'll have a bunch of fun.
Okay.
It's called dogging. I don't know why it's called dogging. I haven't done any of it.
I don't think the prevalence of swinging being mentioned in popular culture, especially in a humorous context, has ever really relied on how popular it was in the actual culture. Or maybe I'm wrong. It seems like swinging as a joke, or to make, you know, putting it in a show or a movie or something to make fun of it, or to make fun of the people that do it. That's been going on for a long time.
I think its prevalence as a concept in the culture affects its prevalence as a source of comedy.
Sure, I suppose that's
people have to know what swinging is to get swinging jokes.
Yeah.
But I suppose that doesn't mean more people have to swing, so more people know what swinging is necessarily.
Well, I'm just saying
it can just be for whatever reason it's in the cultural zeitgeist. Then we're gonna make fun of it.
Yeah. I mean, because you know, I've seen it in shows lots of times. You know, the joke is that a couple shows up and they don't realize that's what's going on, and everyone's putting their keys in a bowl
or
something.
The key party.
So, and everybody knows what that is, and you still see that in TV and movies sometimes. Even though I don't know how prevalent that is actually in the culture.
I do find it interesting. In a lot of 70s exploitation film, of which I watch a lot of 70s exploitation film, there is often, like, I mean, sometimes it's articulated, but often the unspoken assumption of casual and free sex. That, like, two people who just met and are just hanging out and have no romantic interest totally might be, we've got an hour or two to kill, you want to have sex? And that, like, that's normal.
Mm.
And I don't, like, I think that is based in a belief at the time that free love was a normal thing that... Whereas,
it should be, maybe?
Well, no, but, I mean, a lot of people think about it now, the 70s, everybody was having free love. And then, like... actual data from the time is like not really
mm-hmm.
like some
but
it was niches, like it wasn't just everybody, but I always find it weird, like there's some movies that make a big point about it because then they're like, here's the lousy explanation we're gonna have for why we have like seven sex scenes, and I'm like, that's fine, but the ones where it's just sort of a given, I'm like, that's weird to me.
Yeah,
like, what did moviegoers at the time think of that?
Yeah.
Did that seem normal, or were they like, oh no, these are the awesome people who just fuck all the time?
Yeah, these are the cool people. I wish I was one of the cool people.
Exactly.
Like, thinking in the audience, why can't I be cool like that?
There's a whole episode of that 70s show where the guys go see an X-rated movie, and the one guy sees an activity that he'd never seen before, and out of concern that he's a boring lover to his girlfriend, he attempts this activity on her, and she freaks out, and she's like, mostly like, don't surprise a girl with it. But like, they make a point of like never specifying what it is.
Mm.
Trish and I have spent many a conversation trying to figure it out, because we're like, what's something that a teenager, a sexually active teenager in the 70s, wouldn't know of, that would be in an X-rated film? Like,
that's hard to imagine.
We're like, it kind of has to be anal. That's the only thing we can think of. Because it's like, everything else is just sort of normal. But I'm like, but that doesn't seem to fit, no pun intended, either. And I'm like, and I mean, and that makes it all the funnier, because you have no idea. But
maybe they had no idea.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure.
Speaking of things portrayed in films that probably wasn't anyone's life, but that I know people looked at and thought, oh, there's actual people like this, and I wish I was like this, is pretty much every 80s film, like all the 16 Candles and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
These were films when I saw them. Okay. I never was interested in seeing these films because, you know, when people told me, oh, they're like teenage coming-of-age film, and I was a teenager, and I thought, that sounds dumb, so I didn't want to see it.
But he got stuck in a Clockwork Orange thing where they tied him down.
Everybody else had seen it and talked about how great it was, and then suddenly they were wearing these weird clothes that they weren't wearing before and doing all this stuff, and I thought, well, this is having a huge impact on, you know, my friends, so if I do have an opportunity to see this sometime, and that was back in the days where it was probably going to be when you were at someone's house and they rented it, you know, whatever, on a VHS tape. So I did find ways to watch these films just to see what's really influencing my friends so much.
And there was a conceit built into the genre that this was, like, somehow realistic. Like, that this was the first romance movies that were showing teens the way they really were.
Well,
like, The Breakfast Club
was all
about... And I'm like, but they were faker than ever.
Well, this is another thing the media would say. Well, the reason these movies are so popular is because teenagers are watching them and they're saying, yeah, this really expresses what teenagers think and feel. And I thought, really? So when I watched them, now, granted, I wasn't I didn't have the inside track into what my friends were doing.
Yeah.
I didn't drink. There were a lot of things I didn't do, so I wasn't around when they were doing things. But I had a lot of friends who liked to confide in me about things, so I knew a little bit about what was going on. And nothing I saw in these movies matched these kids' lives, and unless they watched the movie and then they tried
and
to
they would do it. Yeah,
manipulate things in their life to make them happen.
And I think that's a thing, because I had that in the 90s with things like 90210, and what it was people in their 20s and sometimes 30s playing teenagers, and then younger teenagers or tweens watching it thinking that's how teenagers were, wanting to act like that.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of that from Saved by the Bell. Also did that to me. Like, what, nowadays it's hilarious to think about, but at the time, like, I thought Saved by the Bell was really cool, and like, and 90210 very much I wanted to be. I would constantly be like, which one of them would be my girlfriend? You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I thought it was really odd. Now, not everyone I knew was like this, but there were...
I really do peg you as an Anthony Michael Hall in Breakfast Club, though. I mean, I feel that vibe off of you.
I don't think so. I mean, and there were specific friends I had who, they would constantly watch these movies. They would insist that, oh yeah, this is what teenage life is like, and then they would emulate. It was like a self-fulfilling prophecy
was. Well,
I thought it was so weird.
And we have that now. Romantic comedies. Everybody, people know they're fake. If you say, you know, relationships are not like that, they're like, of course I know that.
Relationships shouldn't be like that.
And they know, yes, and they'll even often admit to that. But we see them and we're so inundated with it that they think, and that's where you get a lot of this still constant, they're the one, and you know, oh, and it's where all these guys get this idea that, like, stalking is romantic.
Because
there's a lot of rom-coms where people stalk people, and it's viewed as romantic, and they end up with the person. And, yeah, and it still does it, and it's a little less conscious now, because, like I said, we're all, admit, I know it's fake, but I love it.
I know it's fake, but
I like
love
the happy
it.
Ending. It's not a happy ending. It's a mutual psychotic break.
Well, it's the fantasy genre for certain people. Except
yeah, it is.
The problem is, what the thing that is generally called the fantasy genre has such outrageous things in it. It's really hard for you to ever confuse it for reality, even though some fantasy fans do. With the romance stuff that is the fantasy genre for a particular group of people. There's no magic going on. No, sometimes there is, but a lot of times there's not. And so there's nothing in the story to, like, in your face say this is a fantasy, even though it is. So I think sometimes it's easier to confuse it with reality or want it to be reality, maybe. Well, I don't know.
And it's in the film DNA at this point. If I am watching a movie, regardless of the genre, and a man and a woman meet and do not get along.
Oh yeah, they're gonna be together.
They're right? gonna end up together.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's a terrible formula.
Terrible. Terrible message.
At least give me the old ones where, like, they get along and they're smitten and then they end up together. And I'm like, that's fine, and 3 months from now they'll break up, whatever.
How about make it somewhat realistic where they meet and they're friends. Like, genuinely friends for a while. Nothing else.
Yep.
And then something happens.
Yeah.
That's kind of a little more like real life, or at least the way it ought to work, probably, if there's an ought to work. But no. They don't like each other, or like you said, they're immediately in love at first sight.
Or somebody's been pining forever, and the other person finds out and immediately wants... By the way, guess who's the one that's pining forever? The dude. Always the dude. Yeah. Fuck those guys. What
it's
were
like
we
that,
talking about?
It's like that song...
Your Wife.
It's like that song Save the Best for Last. I remember hearing that song when it first came out. I thought, this is pretty terrible. Save the Best for Last? What's
That's
that supposed
so many
to be?
Things that, like,
what is
if
that
you
supposed
think
to be?
About it, it's. Well, okay, I'll give you one.
I will date you, but first, I'm going to date all these people. I'm saving the best for last.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah.
That's so weird. Oh, man.
Messaging has been bugging me lately. There's a commercial for some detergent. I don't remember which one. And this guy comes in to his office, and he bumps into his boss. And he says, oh, sorry, I just got in now because I was at a doctor's appointment. And his boss leans in, sniffs him.
His shirt, yeah.
Rolls his eyes and walks off. And they say, you say you've been at a medical appointment, but your shirt says you've been at a steakhouse.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you know your shirt is only half washed. And if you watch it with other stuff, it's fine. Now, there's one of two messages here. Neither of which is super good. But one of them is, you went to a steakhouse sometime in the past.
And your shirt got half washed.
And you, no, and it got steakhoused.
Yeah.
And then time went on and you did laundry and you washed your shirt. And then you wore it today. Went to the doctor's. Came in. And now, because your shirt still smells like last week's steakhouse, you might get in trouble with your boss.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what it seems to be saying.
That's not something that has ever happened. But so much worse than that is the other version where you went to a steakhouse.
Instead of going to a thing,
and then, like, ran home and washed it? I'm not even clear on that part, but the important part is it's saying, when you want to screw over your boss by lying about your medical appointments, use our detergent or he's going to catch you.
By smelling you.
Well, yeah, that whole bit
was... that part, too.
Because if you take the boss and the trouble out of consideration, I'm like, if I'm a person who goes to a steakhouse and later my shirt smells like that steakhouse, I'm perfectly fine with that. That's awesome. I'm like, oh, that was such a good ribeye.
Why don't they have steakhouse smelling detergent?
Right? Gain has new fresh scent, steakhouse. That would be awesome. I could go for that.
Not doctor's office, though. Probably not.
Yeah, that's when you need to cover. I was at a doctor's appointment. No, you weren't. Yeah, I was. Smell my shirt. Smells like isopropyl, tongue depressors, and three-year-old magazines.
There you go.
Fool your boss subtly with sense. You're given the old excuse that you had a flat tire. Here, spray some of this on you. It'll smell like 30 weight and a lug wrench.
Speaking of jokes, going back to our previous thing.
We were.
I told a pretty good joke yesterday, and I don't think the person I told it to got it.
That's a shame.
I was really disappointed because...
Was it about the Energizer Bunny?
No, for the first time in my life, I had to have dental work done because one of my teeth was cracked.
Okay.
Probably because at home...
Fight Club?
No, at home we...
Sorry, we're not supposed
to buy dry beans and cook them.
Yes.
But to do that, you have to clean them well and sort them well because there can be actual rocks in there. One time we didn't wash them well enough. I was eating and I bit down hard on a rock and I think it cracked that tooth. Right. And that was some time ago.
All right.
But finally, it's bothered me enough that they're going to put a crown on it.
Okay.
So I go in and this dentist office has a kind of a cool thing is if they're doing a procedure that's going to take a while, and this was like an hour and a half, it took them to do the crown or whatever, the temporary crown.
Yes.
That they'll let you watch Netflix.
Nice.
And I said, oh, Netflix and drill. She didn't get it. But that's a good one, right?
I'm still coping with the fact that you know Netflix and chill, and yet you know another person who doesn't.
I don't think they got it. I thought, oh, man, that was a good joke.
I mean...
Netflix and drill.
I'm not going to call it good.
Oh, come on.
But it works as a joke.
It's a good one.
It's not bad. I'll give it to you. But I'm just like, how do you know that, and yet you're hanging out with somebody who doesn't know that?
But I didn't watch Netflix or listen to music or anything.
Did you chill? Did they drill?
They did drill, for sure.
I've lost what the point of this conversation was.
We were
drilling for oil.
No, I was talking about how I told a joke and it didn't work, but I thought it was a good one anyway, so it got wasted.
Yes. No, there's a lot of that stuff. Airplanes now, they got Wi-Fi on there.
Would you watch Netflix while you're having dental work done?
Yeah, probably. I'd probably be okay with that.
Hmm.
Or video games. I've heard a lot of them, they let you play video games, too.
While they're working on your teeth?
Yeah.
That's weird.
Anything to distract you. But no, planes have this now. Even if you don't use the Wi-Fi, they've got the screens in the chair, like in the back of the chair, and you can watch a bunch of stuff. You can watch movies, and it's all for free, and it's like, they should have thought of this ages ago, because it keeps them docile.
Yeah.
Same thing. If you're distracted by Netflix, you're less likely to freak out when they stab you in the nerve.
Well, I think that's what that was the idea. Well,
now, did you have to say nah, ha,
no? No, okay. This was beforehand. But also, I think they don't want you paying attention. Like the worst thing about them drilling on your teeth is that you can hear it really.
Yeah, you can't feel it; they numb you, right?
So it's the sound of it that bothers people. But that doesn't really bother me.
Yeah, but no, it's a variant on. The kid's scared to get a shot. So first of all, you tell him to look away. And second of all, you tell him a story or distract him or something while they're doing it. It's just a longer version of that. Yeah. Heck, I've got it now at the gym. I now watch Netflix at the gym while I'm on the treadmill. It's a complete, like, it's so much easier.
Yeah.
To do. And before I would listen to audiobooks and stuff, but both the visual and audio stimulus.
Yeah.
So much easier. I get caught up in the story. I completely forget I'm walking. And walking for me is as bad as dental work. Although, pretty soon they're just going to call me Bleeding Gums Murphy. I haven't been to a dentist since 99.
Is that a swipe at Irish people?
No, it's a character from The Simpsons.
Oh.
It's one of the,
it's
like...
probably still a swipe at
it's
Irish
It's one people. Of, like, three people on The Simpsons that actually died and it took.
Oh, I didn't
There was know. Him, Marvin Monroe... Oh, I guess Kerbopel died too now.
Yeah,
so there's four.
Everybody.
Yeah, Bleeding Gums Murphy died in like season four. So, but yeah, it's him and Dr. Marvin Monroe and Maude Flanders and basically everybody everybody Ned Flanders ever married.
Mm.
In fact, there was something recently where there was a shot and he had the ghosts of both of his wives floating above his head.
Oh.
It was weird. Alright, draw another. I think it's your turn again.
It is my turn.
I see two, so yeah. You get the odd ones. Even in the evil universe, you're the weird one.
Yep, that's me. Whoa, this is long. Also from Azure Talon.
Oh my god!
And abridged or whatever.
Oh my god, spend more time with your family.
Character idea.
Alright.
Pork Spork, the orc with a fork, travels around eating and learning about food. Pork Spork, the orc with a fork, travels around eating and learning about food. Fantasy. I mean... The hat really wrote smaller to get this all in here. And I don't have my glasses. Fantasy.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, maybe you should, because I really can't see it very well.
Character idea. Pork Spork, the orc with a fork, travels around eating and learning about food. Fantasy Guy Fieri. What do you think? They already vetoed my flatulist bard.
What is he talking about?
Well, based on the context, I'm thinking he was playing. They were doing a role playing game,
oh, yeah.
And he was making a character. And his first character was a bard that farts, and I'm guessing
they plays via
that. And they said
they
no, that
nicked
sucks.
That. Okay.
So then he's going with Pork Spork, the orc with a fork.
Oh. Okay. Sure. Talon, just knock yourself.
Oh, out. You.
What's
bastard.
What's Fantasy Guy Fieri mean? Is that what it
says? Do you know who Guy Fieri. You know who Guy Fieri is? All right. I'll try and explain Guy Fieri to you.
He's a chef, right?
He's a chef. He's a celebrity. He has several shows on the Food Network. He wears a lot of bowling shirts with flames on them. He has hair that is spiked up with frosted tips. He refers frequently to Flavortown.
Like we're going to Flavortown?
Yeah, or that there, that's Flavortown lives there and stuff like that. He has a restaurant chain that includes a ubiquitous condiment that he called donkey sauce for many years.
So this pork spork is supposed to be like him?
I think it, yeah. Guy Fieri is the living embodiment of mainstream American food culture. Like, embarrassing trailer trash mainstream American food culture. Hmm. Which I think is unfair to Guy Fieri in a lot of ways. Police lights out there. So he's saying this is the fantasy equivalent of that.
Is that why the character has to be an orc? Or is that just...
No, I think that was just for onomatopoetic reasons.
Oh, okay.
Because pork, spork, the elf with a fork doesn't sound as cool.
Hmm. Well, yeah, have fun with that, Azertown. I'm not sure what their issues were with your bard, actually, but...
I can think of one. I don't want to fucking play with a farting bard. I mean... Okay. I don't think he really wants our answer. I think he just thought it would be fun to hear us talk about that.
Okay.
I think he just thinks, he's like, haha, I'm funny. I don't think he really wants our answer, but too fucking bad. Like you sent it in, so like I'm going to give you.
Like he made us say underpants.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But too bad, I'm going to answer you, so suck it. If this is a comedy-based one-shot adventure, sure. Why not? Fine. It's not a special... It's cute, but whatever. If it is anything more than that, it's a terrible idea because it's one note and it's gimmicky as fuck one note. It's slightly less bad than Fatulous Bard because that's a smaller note and a tackier, dumber note that has less spot, but this is still pretty one. No, you don't base a character around a gimmick, and that's what this is.
No, I see.
In my opinion. Your mileage may vary if you suck at role-playing games. But in my personal opinion that also happens to be objectively right, you don't make a character based on a gimmick. And it's far too common, and yeah. I almost said you're better than this, Azertown. I don't know that that's true, but you should be better than this, Azertown. Work on being better than this. But if it's a one-shot and it's supposed to be silly, yeah, because you could probably get 3 hours worth of occasionally making food jokes at a con session or something like that. That's fine. Whatever. Flagellus Bard would get old so incredibly fast.
With the limited amount of role-playing that I've done, because of where and when I do it and with whom I do it, I do a lot of character creation, like real serious character creation. I mean, even when I'm given a character sheet, there's often not enough information to flesh out the character. But a lot of times I'm not even given that. I'm totally making the character up from scratch. So,
what's your process?
I was just thinking about that because as you were talking about one note, I was thinking, gosh, do I commit that error because I'm a new gamer? I guess I could easily pick some one thing and say, oh, this would be hilarious or great or whatever, and then it turns out to be stupid or boring or whatever. But I don't think I do that.
Let me give you something to work with here, examples of this, because I was just talking the other day with somebody about this. There are two major ways I know of for character creation.
Okay.
And one, which a lot of people in my group have, not everybody, but a lot of them, is you come up with a very basic concept, which often can be as simple as this kind of class / this kind of race, stuff like that, or just a very bare bones, like one sentence concept. This is a general what do they do kind of thing almost. And then you do the stats accordingly and what you think will be fun. And frequently it's that, like, it's like, well, my character concept isn't filled out enough to know what this would be, so I'll pick these things because they sound good. And then you sort of flesh out the character as you're playing it.
and that happens either
like
way.
Over a few. The influence I think exists, and it's hard for it not to. Right. But some people, like literally at the beginning, like, I don't really know who this character is, and then they do that. What I do, and it, not a conscious choice, this is just what I do, and a couple friends I know do this, is I sit around and think about it, and a person just pops into my head, like a fully formed individual.
Hmm.
And then I sit down and try and figure out how to translate that into the stats of whatever game we're playing. But it's not, I'm going to make this and then see what how it would be fun to play it. It's, I know who my character is. Now I have to see how I can fit that into the game.
I think I probably approach it the same, because one of the art forms, you know, I've done lots of things, puppeteering, all this stuff. But one of the art forms that I did early in my life, and I have done all my life, so this is probably the art form that I've practiced the most, and I probably have the most experience at. And maybe of all the things, I'm the best at it, not compared to other people maybe, but compared to the other things I do, is songwriting. And I think when you, in songwriting, when you're writing popular songs, a lot of times, first of all, I'm not sure I have a set method to begin with, but in popular songs, a lot of times you'll find a hook. That's kind of what you'll start with. So I think I do this similar thing with characters. I'll find a hook. For example, when I was playing a dragon and I had to make up the character from scratch, Dave had the guy. David was running the game, and he had these little plastic dragons, and mine had a wing that was bad. So that became the hook. You know, that the dragon was going to have a bad wing. I was going to name him Flip. And from then on, everything just kind of went in a process. And it's in a cascade, so to speak. We were playing...
By the time you put the character on the paper, the description was no longer a dragon named Flip with one bad wing.
No, it was complicated. Yeah. It, like I said, things just kind of blew up from there.
Yeah.
And like, we played Atomic Robo, and the hook there for me was, what would be a funny... You know, you're supposed to be an action scientist, and what would be funny? And humorous would be an action psychiatrist. It also seemed like something that people wouldn't normally pick.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as I thought of that, all kinds of other things came with it. Sometimes I'll use, because I am a storyteller and I have written stories, I'll use concepts that I've done before.
Oh, yeah.
I'm helping Dave playtest something now, and I needed to come up with an alien. So I came up, I created this alien race that photosynthesizes, and is kind of horrified by our race because we eat things.
Yeah.
And so that became part of it. So, but usually it starts with some kernel, some significant thing that just makes like a big bang happen in my head, and it just fleshes itself out, basically.
And and I think that's probably pretty similar for me. Sometimes I the kernel's almost subconscious on my part. I should say this, making a fantasy character who happens to have the thing that they're kind of a foodie and kind of curious about local cuisine when they go places is totally fine. That's kind of a neat quirk to put in your character. It's that. It's a quirk. It should not be your character concept.
No. Well, and see, that's... To me, I think one of the reasons that Big Bang thing kind of happens is... Once I have what the hook basically does is it gives me something to start the conversation with the character. The character kind of tells me what the character is.
Yep.
So the broken wing or the bad wing is, oh, how did that happen? And then back and forth. And before you know it, this character has told me what they're like.
And basically, the problem is they are such different styles of character creation that it can get very frustrating with the other camp, almost. Especially as a GM, I'm just like, why are your characters not, you know... And the answer is they haven't really got a solid feel for the personality yet.
Sure.
And that's fine, but I get frustrated because I'm like, I already do as soon as I start, of course. I'm the one who, like, the night before I'm going to game, I'm always like, oh, I'm so excited because I have this person now, and they're really neat.
Well, and my characters often do and say things that I wouldn't do or say. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I would hope so.
I mean, in the
I
moment,
have a theory.
They're making jokes, or they're doing things, or they have preferences that I wouldn't normally
I have a theory that when you break it down to individual character traits, like as granular as you can get,
mm-hmm.
for most people, their character's traits are some combination of almost exactly like them,
mm-hmm.
or the exact opposite of them.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because for a lot of people, they play characters that are very like them, and then if they try and branch out from that, the answer is, well, I'll flip this to the complete opposite
yeah.
in these ways. And I like to think I don't do that. I'm pretty sure I do that, too.
Well, yeah, we probably all do. So
And some people are very much one or the other. I know some players that I'm like, they usually basically play themselves. And I know other people that are like, they usually work really hard to play somebody the exact opposite of themselves.
Well, I mean, as you know, given a choice, I'll almost always play myself as whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, that's either not an option, or I can see that that's not going to be a good option for everybody, right? It's 'cause a lot of times I can see that other people are playing characters that are gregarious and are going to be taking charge a lot, and I don't want my character to compete with them, so I'll pick a more quiet character. Or, you know, a more utilitarian character that is just filling in the gaps.
Advanced level character creation does involve considering party balance while you're creating.
Yeah, you've got to do that.
And I frequently, if I'm going to be, it's like, okay, everybody decide their character, and I'll decide last, and I'll just fill in whatever hole.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm much more comfortable with playing a broad range of
things. You're flexible. Yeah.
I feel like that's true. I don't know if that's true. But I always feel, I'm like, okay, so we clearly have a tank, we've clearly got a face. We don't really have the tech person, or we don't really have the magic person, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I typically don't want to be, if it's a campaign where someone has to be the leader, especially if there's like a captain or something.
Yeah.
I definitely don't want to just jump into that role. Unless nobody else seems to want it.
Yeah.
And then I'll do it. I don't have a problem doing it.
And that's just like life. I mean, when you work on a group project, it's the same thing. It's like, I don't want to take charge if nobody else wants to.
Yeah.
Because, again, we're both essentially white guys. So it's really easy for everything to default to us being in charge.
Yes, but, and also we're, we think this about ourselves, but I think it has also been demonstrated in our life experiences. We can pretty much fit where we need to fit. I mean, you know, I'm totally comfortable taking the orders from someone who, a competent person who knows what they're doing. I have no problem with that. But I also have no problem being in a leadership position, so that's fine. And some people really have a preference.
Yeah.
And that's been kind of true my whole life. I noticed that most people I've known have preferences about things that I don't. It's like, well, if you feel that strongly about it, and I don't, why should I not let you have what you want? And then I'll be perfectly happy with whatever's left. And I've always been that way.
I wish I'd known that before I beat you in the head with a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi. All right. Next week, hopefully, I mean, I don't know what week this is, but hopefully whatever week this is, the following one will be those other guys, because... Well, as we said, we hate you guys and we hate this, and this is some sort of cosmic punishment for all the child eating. So tune in next week. We won't be here.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.